Shabbat Shalom. Like baseball and apple pie, America's protection of free speech sits at the heart of who we are as a nation. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. Foundational words, as described by Park Avenue's own Floyd Abrams in his new book, The Soul of the First Amendment. He didn't tell me he was going to be in shul today. That marked the exceptionalism of the United States and its protections it offers to freedom of expression. Whatever the price we pay for this freedom, be it hate speech or Holocaust denial, far worse we know would be the deleterious effects of any effort to limit or suppress our inalienable right to free expression. As Jews, it's this right to free speech that is equally sacrosanct to our tradition of dialogue and dissent. One need only think of a single page of Talmud, the debates of the rabbis arrayed on every page, minority opinions codified alongside the majority, a veritable celebration of a robust generational conversation. Truth, taught the rabbis of old, is a seal of the Holy One, praise be He. Neither men nor angels are trusted with the great seal. For Jews, it is by way of the free and unhindered exchange of ideas whereby humanity seeks to arrive at truth, all the while knowing that it will forever lie just beyond our grasp. Biblically speaking, it's a gift of speech that makes us human. To deny our right to free expression, as such, is to deny a fundamental aspect of our humanity. In the words of Benjamin Cardozo, freedom of expression is the matrix, the indispensable condition of nearly every other form of freedom. And it's because freedom of speech is fundamental to who we are as Americans, as Jews, and as American Jews, that this morning I want to address what I believe to be a most delicate challenge to free speech within our community. And that is how we speak to each other regarding that which is so sacred, I hope to us all, the State of Israel. Our generation, born into this blessed era of Jewish sovereignty after 2,000 years of exile, born into an empowered American Jewish life that can advocate on behalf of Israel as an expression of our Jewish identity, is also a generation that, if we do not take steps towards a course correction, we'll risk waking up discovering that the very State of Israel that should bring us together and be our source of strength has become a political football or third rail that divides us and could be our downfall. Before I step forward, let me take a step back by sharing three observations, none of which I hope are either new or controversial. First, the State of Israel, no different than any other nation state, has its imperfections. Second, the subject of the State of Israel, no different than any other subject Jews discuss, is a subject upon which there are a multiplicity of opinions. And third, the State of Israel, for reasons rooted in historic and contemporary anti-Semitisms, is subjected to an unrelenting barrage of public attacks in the form of concerted efforts to delegitimize the right of the Jewish state to exist. So with the lay of the land established, our question becomes one of the degree to which the American Jewish community is capable of housing an open and civil dialogue regarding Israel, all the while remaining vigilant against those who would see Israel wiped off the map. And it's on this measure, regretfully, where our community fails to make the grade. Our challenge, thank God, is not that of a formal suppression of speech. Jews can, if we so choose, say what we want, how we want, and when we want on the subject of Israel. The concern, rather, are the nefarious efforts within the Jewish community to label any criticism of Israel as beyond the bounds of acceptable communal discourse. Free speech exists, but there is a muzzling effort at foot to preclude the possibility of our community actualizing either our American or Jewish ideal of the free exchange of ideas. In the most basic terms, I would describe what is taking place to be what the philosophers call the black and white fallacy, a sort of you are with us or against us approach, whereby nuanced arguments are framed as either or choices between extremes. Either support the policies of the Israeli government or you're a self-hating Jew. Anyone who criticizes Israel is a supporter of BDS and the anti-Zionists. Or alternatively, every settler in the West Bank is a human rights abusing colonialist. No longer a place of robust debate, the American Jewish community has become a series of mutually exclusive amen corners who refuse to dignify the right of others to express themselves. Let me give you an example. Last week in a synagogue in Detroit, a concert by the fabulous Israeli performer Ahinoam Nini, also known as Noah, who I hope we hear a selection from later in the service, was canceled due to security concerns resultant of the fact that she has given expression to left-wing political positions, including support of a two-state resolution and support of peaceful coexistence with Palestinians. Let that sink in. The threat of physical violence from within the camp of American Jewry against an Israeli artist who is an advocate for peace. Most muzzlings do not happen under the threat of violence. Another altogether frightening is the increasingly frequent effort online, in print, or in person to demonize or delegitimize a point of view not your own by questioning that person's bona fides. It happens all the time to leaders in the Jewish community, to my colleagues, and even to me. Certain elements of the Jewish community have discovered that more effective than debating someone's ideas is to question a Jew's Zionism by way of cyberbullying or Twitter shaming. A slanderous remark in the comment section of an article, a nasty Facebook post, which is then read by an undiscerning third party, perhaps even a congregant, who then jumps to the conclusion that so-and-so is not who say they are. If, after all, I can pathologize a point of view by shaming a person into silence or fudging the question of someone's politics and their patriotism, or in this case, their Zionism, then why wouldn't I? It's such a cumbersome and laborious process to argue a point when one need only undermine a person's loyalty or worse, their humanity. Nobody's hands are totally clean. Both the right and the left are guilty of shouting down their opposition rather than dignify the possibility of reasoned debate. Indeed, I would contend that we are living through a frightening Orwellian cultural moment, the Jewish community functioning in a wider post-fact world, whereby dissenting views are labeled as fake or bad or disloyal, as opposed to what they really are, dissenting views. What can and can't be said? Who is and isn't allowed into the pro-Israel conversation, convention, or conference? Again, I wouldn't characterize it as a legally formalistic suppression of speech, but rather a concerted effort by way of ad hominem attacks, misrepresentation, verbal castigation, and otherwise, to stigmatize anyone whose views extend beyond the bounds of what the radical extremes would deem as acceptable. And it's because this vitriol and toxicity is not only beneath our ideals of free discourse, but also dangerous to the health of American Jewry, Israel, and the all-important relationship between the two, that it must come to a stop. To return to where I began, if we're really committed to supporting Israel, then we must know that it's by way of encouraging free speech, not suppressing it, whereby truth will be found. Notwithstanding the fact that anti-Zionists and anti-Semites do indeed exist, often cloaked in the language of human rights or the politics of intersectionality, anyone with a head on their shoulders knows full well that the black and white option of being either with us or against us is not only intellectually lazy, but also an impediment to the very transformations of thought and, by extension, policy that we all seek. As Brandeis famously stated, "Freedom to think as you will and to speak as you think are means indispensable to the discovery and spread of political truth." With the parties in the Middle East becoming more polarized and increasingly intransigent, our discourse needs to become more, not less, vigorous, all with the hope of discovering and spreading truths that can only emerge by way of robust and a respectful exchange of ideas. But the issue isn't just one of the abstract search for truth. To delegitimize dissenting views is counterproductive in that it serves to narrow your base even as the base of your adversary expands. Israel and the pro-Israel community doesn't lack for enemies, but when we choose to fight within our own camp as opposed to fighting the real bad guys, it is they, not us, who have the last laugh. The Jewish community is small enough as it is. Do we really need to unnecessarily place our kinsmen outside of the Israeli camp as enemies of the state? We need to be able to operate with people who have different views than our own, to have what the rabbis call a heart of many rooms. We need to support those voices that occupy the same center of the Israel conversation, those voices that are capable of engaging with views not their own. We dare not cede the right to the megaphone to the radical elements of the community, those people who prize the rightness of their own views over the well-being of the Jewish people as a whole. And finally, we would do well to realize that it will be through our failure to embrace a plurality of views whereby we will lose the next generation of pro-Israel advocates. Yes, the instigators of the BDS movement is constituted by numerous haters of Israel. But as a recent ADL Reut study shows, its long tail includes bystanders, undecideds, and yes, those whose love for Israel prompts them to openly protest the policies of the Israeli government. We do ourselves, and more importantly, our children, a great disservice by lumping them all into one basket of anti-Zionist deplorables. Let me put it another way. If you tell a typical American Jewish college student that there's only one way to be pro-Israel, and she or he must take some loyalty oath to that view or be labeled as a BDS supporter or self-hating Jew, then what do you think that kid will do? My hunch, she or he will walk away from the conversation entirely. That child will see a Jewish community willfully denying reality as they perceive it, choose universal values over particular ones, and check out of the pro-Israel and Jewish conversation altogether. To cite the aforementioned report, the pro-Israel network needs to acknowledge the vital significance of those willing to fight delegitimization among progressive groups, even as they criticize Israeli government policies. Not only is it not true, not only is it a form of schoolyard bullying, but it's plain old bad policy to demand an overly narrow definition of what it means to be pro-Israel. If we truly want our children to be vocal and adroit defenders of the state of Israel, then they need to know that the pro-Israel community is one that encourages, not discourages, debate. Not only must the coming generation be steeped in love and affection for Israel and its history, not only must they be able to argue the case for Jewish self-determination, not only must they be able to discern the difference between acceptable criticism of Israel and anti-Semitism, but they also need to spend time learning the other side of the story. Our advocacy on behalf of Israel becomes more, not less, credible, having been educated in the competing narrative on the other side. Of course, there are limits. Not every view needs to be dignified, and we must be careful not to provide ammunition to Israel's critics. But we must encounter the narrative, not our own, for only in doing so will we be able to defend our side, understand the humanity of another, and yes, hopefully build bridges of understanding into the future. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the priests, Long ago, the rabbis noted the curious doubling of the word emor, meaning to speak, in the opening sentence of this week's parsha. The twofold message for us today is clear. We must speak on behalf of Israel, in public, in private, advocates both in word and in deed. We must also speak out on behalf of those seeking to speak out. We must defend their right to openly express their views, even when, perhaps especially when, those views are not our own. To engage in dialogue and debate, this is our people's strength, the secret to who we are, and it's an ideal worth defending when we see it in breach. Leman Sion lo echashe, for the sake of Zion, we will not be silent, nor, I would add, should we let anyone be silenced. The measure of our love for Israel is to be found not just in our advocacy on behalf of the Jewish state, but in our ability to dignify the wide definition of what it means to be pro-Israel. May we all find the wisdom, patience, and strength to make for ourselves a heart of many rooms, and may the people and the state of Israel be strengthened by way of our efforts. Shabbat Shalom.